This is Jim Eagster. Coming today on the show, we'll visit with Republican political consultant Sally Nungesser and former Democratic State Senator Tony Garisco. They have some thoughts about contemporary Louisiana politics, and this is an off year for elections, but there's much jockeying going on in the background with people like Senator Landrieu and Congressman Cassidy and Senator Vitter and Lieutenant Governor Jay Darden and perhaps even Governor Bobby Jindal. We'll talk about it. Also on the show, Erica Crenshaw. She is the president and CEO of Execute Now, a former Wall Street equity research analyst, and she will talk about the challenges that nonprofits are having in an uncertain and tenuous economic environment. We'll talk with her. All this, but first the news on 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. This is Jim Eagster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. Outside the area, 877-217-5757. You may reach us at Eagstershow at WRKF.org. Two seasoned Louisiana politicos, Sally Nungesser on the right, Tony Garisco on the left. Sounds like Crossfire, which is coming back, by the way. Tony Garisco, a three-term state senator who lost his Senate seat to none other than Mike Foster in 1987. Mike Foster, the former governor, turns 83 years old tomorrow. And Sally Nungesser worked with Mike Foster, also worked with David Connor Treen, former governor, as his press secretary, and has been involved in Louisiana politics as an operative and even as a candidate for many, many years. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning. Good morning.
Well, let's start with an email sent moments ago from Delia. She says, Governor Jindal wasn't running for governor the first time until he did. When he lost and moved to Metairie, he was not to run for Congress until he did. When elected to Congress, he spent all his time traveling to other parts of the state, even though he was not interested in running again for governor until he did. Since elected governor, he spent all his time in other states because he's not interested in being president or being named to McCain's ticket until he showed up at McCain's Arizona ranch. Now he's doing a 64-parish tour and proclaiming that he will not run for Senate until he does. Sally, is he running for the United States Senate?
I don't think so. I mean, I think they've been pretty strong in closing that door. I don't think they were quite as strong in closing the doors in previous races where he did finally make it. So I don't think he is.
It would make sense, though, for him to run. Now, yesterday, there were campaign finance reports released by both Senator Landrieu and Congressman Cassidy, who right now are the major players in that race, and both of them are raising money by the bucket loads. I think over $4 million for Landrieu, $4.9 million already, and Bill Cassidy's at $3.2 million, and we're, what, year and a half away almost from Election Day. What's going on?
I'm very impressed with Congressman Cassidy's totals. That was unexpected. I'm very impressed with that, running against a sitting U.S. senator. One of the hardest things to raise money for, I think, and I'm very impressed with what he's done.
But he is a sitting U.S. congressman, of course.
Which that helps.
it does help. And right now, unless Governor Jindal gets in the race, he is the ordained candidate of the Republican establishment. So it would seem that he'll raise a lot more money. And it would seem there will be all kinds of third-party money running around in this race next year. It's going to be quite a showdown between Landrieu and Cassidy, or Landrieu, Cassidy, and Jindal, Tony Garisco.
Well, to answer the first question that you asked, I totally agree with Sally that I take the governor at his word. He's adamant about he's not going to run. Also, I don't think it makes sense for him to run. I don't think as a career move that's the way to go. If nothing else, he doesn't want to go. He doesn't want to be in the Senate. Apparently, he wants to be higher than that. And if he risked it and lost, he's done. So that he's not going to run for Senate. I think we should take him out of that equation.
Well, remember Richard Nixon lost the governorship of California by a fairly wide margin to Pat Brown in 1962. 6 years later, Richard Nixon was leader of the free world. So why would it be the end of the world if Bobby Jindal lost to Mary Landrieu?
I just don't think he could turn it around in 1 year and after having lost a race like that and then run for president of the United States or for vice president. I think he would be damaged in some way that he couldn't recover at that time.
Is that why you believe he would not run?
No, I think he hasn't said, but he appears, and all of the scuttlebutt always is that he wants to be president of the United States or vice president, probably president. I would have, if Bobby Jindal asked me to help to counsel him about if his move is to be president, I would have a whole different way for him to do it. But he's not asking me, and it sounds ridiculous, but I would sidestep all of these races, and I would work to be, and this is not a joke, I said it once, I would see if I could get to be the ambassador to India. If he got that, he would be perfect. We need somebody like that. He understands the Indian mind, and he would have foreign policy experience that no other Republican candidate has.
Well, it's unlikely that a Democratic president would appoint him.
Well, that might be a smart move for Obama, too. He gets a Republican, and he really does get a good man. And I think he would really be proud to be something like that. And I just saw what Secretary of State Kerry said, they really need to pay attention to India. And I think this man was conceived in India. He was born in the United States. He would make... I'm not really think it's funny. I think this is really serious. I would move him in that direction and say, you know, you kind of got this state stuff done for now, mm-hmm. and move on in that way. I think it would be a great strategy move.
Well, Sally, the governor has never showcased his Indian heritage. My guess is that the last job he would want is to be ambassador to India. I don't know when's the last time he's been to India, too.
Oh, I don't know that.
It's not like he goes and sees his relatives in the Punjab province a whole lot. I don't think he does. I don't think that's on his radar screen. I think 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue is.
And I say that might be a strategic way to get there. Is what I'm saying.
Yeah. So it's an interesting thought from a guy who certainly is an outside the box thinker. Tony Garisco, but my guess is that he would laugh you out of the room if you if you made this suggestion to him.
He might. He might, yeah. And probably his advisors would do the same thing, but they never went to school.
Well,
they've been homeschooled.
One of them didn't go to traditional school, but homeschool is school. School.
Yeah,
maybe a better school than the one you went to, Tony Garisco.
Well, it probably would be.
Didn't you go to Nichols?
I went to Nichols. I went to Catholic schools. I went to public schools, and I had a social life.
And Nichols, by the way, is a fine university. But but I don't think that just because one of his top advisor, Mr. Timmy Teeple, didn't have a traditional education, he's a smart man.
Absolutely.
I know Timmy's mom. She was probably an awesome teacher.
I bet she was. Yeah. But I would say that people who disparage your Nichols State education are wrong, and people who disparage Timmy Teeple for not going to Nichols or LSU or some other fine Louisiana university, Southern. You know,
no, it's not a university. It's the whole school system. They've never been to any school.
Well, homeschool, it is a school.
What's that?
Homeschool is a school, isn't it?
Yeah, sure. What I'm talking about is the lack of social development. That's all I'm talking about, not the intellect.
Well, Bobby Jindal went to some well-regarded schools, Baton Rouge High, Brown University, Oxford. You don't get much better than that.
Yeah, but there's a defect in their biology department.
Why is that?
Because he doesn't know that. He doesn't understand. He apparently doesn't seem to understand Darwin.
Well, he understands biology. It just in a different way than you and I do.
Well,
is there anything wrong with that?
Well, no. I don't know if he knows the difference, but he's not acting in a way that promotes science as opposed to religion.
Okay, that's Sally, Tony's doing most of the talking.
You yeah,
you're kind of smiling.
Yeah, I give Sally a chance.
No, that's okay. That's okay. I'm enjoying listening.
All right, Rose in Sherwood Forest. Rose, good morning. You're on the air with Tony Garisco and Sally Nungesser.
Oh, good morning. Good morning to Sally. I'm an old volunteer Republican and enjoying this conversation immensely. I have a question, though. How is the party structure these days? Do we still have, you know, the PEC and the PAC and all that stuff? I haven't been to things, and it's like, where are we these days? Do we have enough money?
I think PACs, which were a political organization that were set up under the elected parish executive committees, I think those are pretty much gone, and the PECs are kind of organized in a lot of areas now. But that was, but I think the party's still there. I think it's being funded right now through the graces of the governor. I think he's still helping them in fundraising, and so I think the party structure's still there. There's still a state central committee. I'm not active with it, and I think but I think it's still there, and I think it's still functioning fine.
Thank you, Rose. 297-5633 to talk with Sally Nungesser and or Tony Garisco, both of whom have great experience in Louisiana and national politics and have somewhat different points of view. Now, we've talked at length over the last few weeks about the essay that the governor wrote for Politico. Do you think he actually wrote those words, Sally?
I think it's possible, and you know, I think there's been a lot of drama over this big boy pants and that kind of stuff. I mean, I think he had a point. I don't know if the words did get everybody's attention. I think that's a good thing, because I think we, as Republicans, need to stop being so apologetic. I do think we need to stop whining and acting like somebody did us something. I think we failed in the last election to communicate why our positions are better, and I do think we need to kind of man up a little bit and explain to people why we're the better party and not just complain and seem to be wishy-washy.
Well, that would seem to be the kind of thing you would say in a closed-door meeting with your fellow Republicans or fellow Democrats. You know, we need to put on our big boy pants and man up and kick around the other guys. But to put it in Politico, Tony?
Well, I think here's my second counsel to the and this is personal, counsel to Jindal. And I'm being, again, to help him. He needs to quit the affect and the deportment of being a scold. He's a scold. He scolds people. He scolds the Democrats, the Republicans, the conservatives. Everybody gets scolded. And nobody likes that to be directed toward them. And it's a poor way to be. And I think he should drop that, because he's got enough GQ and intelligence and articulation to not be that way. Again, nobody probably telling him that, but I'm saying it right now.
You I said think, GQ, not IQ?
No, well, GQ is another. Well, GQ, no, well, he dresses well, too.
Not really. But don't you think a lot of that is about getting people's attention? It's
yes.
hard to get people's attention
yes.
nowadays. You've got to use some inflammatory language yeah. in order to even get any attention for what you're saying. And it's really mm-hmm. nice to be able to go out there and say things that are very highbrow and that kind of stuff. But does anybody pay attention? I don't think so.
Well, stop the navel gazing.
Yeah.
That's
I thought
right.
he was talking about I Dream of Jeannie. Talking about
that's
his fellow
good.
Republicans. So, at the very least, this speech doesn't seem to have been received too well.
Like I said, people don't like it. The people who don't like it directed at them. I don't know if it's not received by the general public, and that's probably what he's speaking to.
I think it was received better in Republican rooms than it was in Democrat rooms. I think the Democrats looked at it mm-hmm. and said, oh, my gosh, you know, this is really mean-spirited of him. But I think the Republicans looked at it and went, he's right, you mm-hmm. know.
297-5633, we're going to talk about the other major players in state politics now. And next year, the marquee race, as mentioned, will be Senator Landrieu running for a fourth term against either Congressman Cassidy or Bobby Jindal, Governor Jindal, or both of them. How does that race shape up, Sally?
It looks like it's shaping up very well for Congressman Cassidy. I think if he can have the correct amount of funding to get his message across, and I think he is very strong candidate. He's well-spoken. He's brilliant, a physician. So I think a lot of us are concerned about Obamacare. I think we're looking for somebody to get that straight so that we all don't have, you know, poor health care in the future. And so I think he's well-positioned, and we are a conservative state. And so I think it's looking really good for him.
Tony, quickly.
I think the same thing. I think Mary is getting long in the tooth. She's now going for her first, her fourth time?
Fourth term, but she's only 57.
Yeah, but she's been there a long time, and she
That's
always
a good
gets
age.
In by, she gets in by a whisker, and I think Cassidy could take that race. Now, I think that all right, depends on how it all moves around. She could become mayor of New Orleans.
Back in 90 seconds with Tony and Sally. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 877-217-5757, wherever you may be, outside the area, inside, it's 297-5633, and you may reach us by email, inkstershow@wrkf.org. Tony Grisco and Sally Nungesser weighing in on contemporary matters, with Louisiana politics always a hot topic of discussion. And next year it's Mary Landrieu and Bill Cassidy and perhaps Bobby Jindal, but at this point the governor says he is not running. And then we look ahead to the governor's race in 2015, and Sally, you're working with Jay Darden. He wants to be governor of Louisiana.
Yes, he does.
What do you think his chances are?
Excellent. Yeah, things are really moving in his direction. We're already hard at work, and he's doing really well. I think the contrast is going to be a great thing for him, because nobody thinks that Jay wants to go anywhere else, and that his love for the state, I think, is going to cross some party lines. I really don't know if the Democrats have a significant candidate in this race. I think he's that strong.
The Democrats have John Bell Edwards, graduate of West Point, state representative, head of the House Democratic Caucus. Is that enough to mount an effective campaign, Tony?
I would say they have John Bell Edwards, who's a rising guy. I think they have Mitch Landrieu, who's already won state office. They have Mitch Landrieu, who's already run state office. And I think that Sally probably has the best candidate, a well-rounded, non-ideological, non-strategic, trying to pull a strategy type candidate. And I think he served that way in the Senate and the state Senate and in the lieutenant governor's office. I think he would make a good governor, although I'm Democrat. But I think he would be a good governor.
Well, I hear that a lot. I hear that a lot from Democrats and Republicans.
Sure.
So it's very exciting to be on his team.
But it's quite possible that one of the other Republicans running will be U.S. Senator David Bruce Vitter, who's never lost an election, and would be the favorite if he got in the race. Tony, can he win the governor's office of the great state of Louisiana?
He could win the governor's office. Oh, he could win the governor. I was too far from the mic. He could win the governor's office. The New Republic article said that there's a feud between he and Jindal, and that Vitter, it turns out to be the most powerful Republican in Louisiana. I would question that. Only one thing, and a caveat, and also this Piccadillo from way back. I think they should leave the man alone about that. That's over with. Except the most powerful Republican, the most powerful Republican in the state of Louisiana is Wendy Vitter.
Why is that?
Well, if something happens, and she would not, if something happened in the regard of what happened before, mm-hmm. which I say we ought to leave alone, if this woman leaves or bolts or quits the situation, he's done. And so she's the most powerful person, I think, political Republican in the state, vis-a-vis what we're talking about.
Well, Wendy Vitter hasn't left, and this is a story that's 6 years old. I'm with you. I think it's over with, unless there's some new revelation,
yes.
And there hasn't been. But will it resurface, Sally, if, for example, will Jay Darden, the gentleman that he is, will he use this against Senator Vitter if they're in the same race?
I'm not on the strategic team. I don't know. I think that all's fair in politics, though. I've been at this for a long time, and I don't think that you should enter any race expecting anything that you've done in your past not to be brought up for you to address. I mean, I just think I don't think mm-hmm. he'll need to bring it up. I think other people will, the mm-hmm. press and other people will. So I think he's going to have to know that going in. And, you know, one of the things that people are overlooking is that he is now the minority member on Public Works and Transportation, which is a huge committee in Washington, D.C., hugely powerful. If we would win the Senate next year, which all indications are are the Republicans, will take the U.S. Senate next year in majority. He will become chairman of that, and that is a huge committee, politically powerful for him and also so important for Louisiana. I mean, he's in a position that would just be I think, too good to go. So is he going to want the job, I guess, is what I'm saying, after next year?
Well,
is going to be a real question.
His whole campaign apparatus and some of his major people are with Congressman Cassidy now. Mm-hmm. So he will certainly take credit if Cassidy unseats Senator Landrum.
Yes.
Then if he becomes governor, he will have the opportunity to appoint his successor to the U.S. Senate. So he would control two U.S. Senate seats and the governorship of Louisiana. Not since Huey Pierce Long, Tony Garrisco, we had a potential for this kind of power, raw, naked power in Louisiana. And David Vitter is a man who uses power.
He does. He knows how to use it. And one day we're going to have volumes that we can buy of David Vitter letters. He loves to write letters. Ever since he was in the legislature here, love a letter.
Well, I think that the dominoes are in place for him to have great influence if everything goes according to form. But in politics, Sally, things usually don't go according
to form. Absolutely. You work like crazy. I always say politics is 99% timing and 1% talent. So,
and a listener points out, Jason, saying, that with George Kennedy running Jay Darden's media commercials, that there's no doubt that Vitter's past transgressions would be brought to the attention of the
electorate. I think George would be disappointed if he was not allowed to talk about it.
But. All right. 297-5633, Dorothy in Goodwood. Please be brief, Dorothy. You're on with Sally and with Tony. Hi, Dorothy.
Oh, good morning, all. I don't think Cassidy is the best candidate the Republicans could put against Mary Landrieu. The Avondale shipyard owner actually is in Mary Landrieu's camp, and he's a Republican. Cassidy is a Tea Partier, and he's way out on the fringe.
All right. Do you think that's the case? Bill Cassidy, by the way, who Dorothy is referring to as a Tea Partier, a decade ago, just 10 short years ago, he was a Democrat supporting Kathleen Blanco for governor against Bobby Jindal.
Yeah, I think that's so funny because, you know, the mark of a really, really good politician, I guess, is that people on each extreme accuses them of the exact opposite, because I've heard that he's not conservative enough, and now she's saying he's too conservative. So I think he's just right.
All right. Well, Tony, you say he's a formidable candidate.
I think he is. As far as the Avondale and Boise Bollinger, who incidentally used to be my seatmate in the Constitutional Convention.
40 years ago.
Bollinger Shipyards is supporting Mary Landrieu, and Boise is a longtime family of Republicans, I think, is because she's been very supportive of the industry that he leads, about building the boats in Louisiana.
I think you'll see Boise giving to Dr. Cassidy as well.
Dr. Samuels at Southern University. Dr. Samuels, you're on with Sally and Tony. Hi.
Good morning, Jim. Good to be with you. I'll make a quick comment before I run off to class. It seemed to me that people will be loath to underestimate Mary Landrieu, because she has won tough race after tough race and has been frequently underestimated by her opponents. And so I will be very mindful of underestimating her, because she has a way of winning these close races.
Well, Sally, I recall when you thought Susie Terrell was going to beat her.
Absolutely, yeah. I do think that Congressman Cassidy has a challenge before him, and I think he's got to operate where he makes no mistakes. But this is somebody who I think is very capable of that, and I think he's got a good team of people working for him. I think if we can't win this one, you're right, maybe she's unbeatable, because this is a really good shot. We've got everything in line for this one.
Well, actually, this will be the only time in four tries for the Senate that Senator Landrieu has run with a Democratic president in an off year, meaning turnout is generally lower and there's usually a backlash against the incumbent. She ran in 1996 when Clinton was running for re-election and barely won, 5,788 votes over Lewis Elwood Woody Jenkins. In 2002, she ran for re-election, and that was 2 years into George Bush, which probably helped her. And in 2008, she was running when Obama and McCain were vying for the presidency. Mm-hmm. So this time she'll quite likely be tied to the politics of President Obama, Tony, whether she wants to or not.
That's probably so.
And she was the vote, as every senator was, because it was that close on Obamacare, and she's going to have to face that, and she's going to have to face all the stuff that's going wrong with that already, you know, even in the implementation of it. So that's an advantage, I think, for our team.
Do you think some things are going right with Obamacare, Tony?
I don't know. It's not in place yet, but it's I know that we, Jindal is one of the few states that's refused to take the Medicare, and we talk about that ad infinitum,
Medicaid.
But we're going to be one of the ones to do not to accept the money. I'll never believe in turning down the money, but...
Will that be an issue in the governor's race? Jay Darden, will he say the governor should take the Medicaid money?
Hopefully by then, this is a moot point, because hopefully by then, Obamacare will be repealed. We'll take the Senate, we'll pass repeal. It'll be vetoed by the president,
wow.
But we'll keep going. We're going to keep going. Obamacare hopefully will never be implemented.
Well, Obama's going to be president when the next governor's race is in Louisiana, so mm-hmm. any repeal would be vetoed by mm-hmm. him.
And
there aren't enough votes to override a presidential veto.
No, but he himself can't implement it. It's so complex, he cannot even implement his own bad idea, I think, as I'm quoting the governor. So...
Well, I think it's a stretch to say that Obamacare will not be the law of the land when the next governor's race takes place.
No, it will be. But I think at that point in time, people will be convinced that as soon as we take the presidency, it will not be the law of the land. So
you're assuming, okay, Sally says Republicans will win
the Senate
next year and retain the House.
Yes.
In 2015, I guess you're saying John J. Darden will be elected governor of the great state of Louisiana.
I think so.
And then in 2016, Sally says Republicans will regain the White House. Who's going to do it?
I agree. I don't know.
Bobby Jindal?
I really don't understand national politics and how you become president of the United States. That's nothing I've ever played in,
Who do the Republicans have who's a viable candidate to be president?
I think we have too many at this point. We mm-hmm. have lots and lots of options. And I think as time goes on, you know, and I know some people have already signed on to Rand Paul. So I don't know who that candidate's going to be, but I know that we've got lots of options. And if we're articulate about why, what our issues are and why people should be for us, I have no doubt we'll win.
So if it's Bobby Jindal and he's running against Hillary Clinton,
mm-hmm.
Bobby Jindal becomes leader of the free world.
Absolutely.
Absolutely, Sally says. Tony?
Oh, my gosh. Bobby Jindal, you can say Tony Garisco said that. Bobby Jindal will never be president or vice president of the United States of America. He's not even on the book in Las Vegas. I looked at Las Vegas for the political betting. There are 10 or 12 people. His face is not even on the book. And at the conservative conference, mm-hmm. he got 3%, I think. He is never going to be president, so he needs to get to do something else. Mm-hmm. That's not a viable thing for him. And I think he's positioning himself with this immigration statement in the paper this morning. I think that's not about immigration, but that's about him having a different view of Rubio, who was on the Gang mm-hmm. of Eight. With the Senate bill.
Okay.
It's all about being president, but the poor guy's self-delusion.
297-5633. Anne downtown. Anne, you're on the air. Good morning.
Yes, I'd just like to comment that I think Ms. Nungesser is living in the Republican bubble that we hear about so often. You know, instead of talking about what we're going to do for the people of this state, I think she misses the message. The Republicans have missed the message. They're not doing anything to take care of the people of this state. And to go around and talk about, our main priority is to get rid of Obamacare without offering anything else, is just a bad state of affairs. And I hope that the Republicans get out there and have some better ideas. But right now, I don't see it happening. It's all just attacks on Obama. And attacks and attacks and attacks and nothing positive. And I'm really tired of hearing that. I don't care if Jay Darden's a good person.
I've given up on the Republicans.
Well, let me just say this. I am not a policy wonk. I am a strategy wonk. So I don't pretend to be the policy expert. But let me just point out a couple of things that have happened. And one of the things that I don't think that anybody can argue with about, first of all, let me address the Bobby Jindal being delusional. They said he was delusional when I went to work for him in 2003 when we were at 3% running for governor. And he got really close to winning that race. So, I mean, he's very talented. So maybe he's delusional, but he's also talented. Then secondly, on policy, let me just say that we do have better solutions than Obamacare. They're market-based solutions. They're solutions that depend on the private sector and not on a socialist regime. That basically, that's where Obamacare is going to go. Obamacare is going to eventually go to a one-payer system where you're going to have the government trying to decide, and you're going to have people trying to decide who are bureaucrats, who gets health care, and in what level you get health care. That's not good for anybody. I don't care whether you're rich or poor. Nobody wants that. And I think that we do have some better solutions. And I think we need to start working on those and not try to move this country to where the government is administering, just like Social Security and all these other things that government is administering. They get very expensive and they don't work. They don't work long term. Second thing is, I think if you look at some of the policy statements on education, where choice, where your child is not trapped in a system that's based on unions and paying people rather than on education. I mean, I think across the board, we have better ideas.
You like the governor's policies. What about the implementation? Has he done a good job on this?
No. I'm disappointed with some of the implementation things, some of the mistakes and the missteps, the Supreme Court decisions, that kind of thing. I think that's all things that could have been avoided.
Well, Tony, the governor, in this case, I think the advisor you're talking about, that's about all, the only person he talks to my knowledge. He doesn't talk a lot to lawmakers about what will work, and it's really useless if something passes and it gets shut down in the courts. It just costs the state a lot of money.
Oh, yeah. And here's another advice to him, and I'm on his side with this. I think he would do well to do away with the deliberative exemption discussions from the public records law and the open meetings law. I think it would inure to his benefit to stop all that, because I think it would help him statewide, and I think it would help him national-wise to cut that out. There's no big secrets in state government that's going to turn the world around. He should let that go. But they're holding on to this, and I don't think that's wise. But, you know, what is the deliberative process?
All right. 297-5633, 877-217-5757. We'll spend a few more minutes with Democrat Tony Garisco and Republican Sally Nungesser talking about politics in Louisiana, which, of course, are influenced by what happens nationally. And quite often, Louisiana influences national politics. And we'll hear from Erica Crenshaw of Execute Now on the perils of nonprofits and others in a tenuous economy. And since that's our segue going to the break, Sally, the economy's better, just not as good as some people would like, including all of us. But has the president done a good job on the economy?
Oh, no, I don't think so. But, you know, let's celebrate a little bit about CB&I, the old Shaw, moving more people into this. I think that may be Bobby Jindal's legacy, all these jobs.
Yeah,
I'm very excited about that.
Yeah, a company started by a prominent Democrat, former chair of the Democratic Party in Louisiana, Jim Bernhardt, CB&I. Does that mean we got the CBI Center downtown? We'll talk about it back in 90 seconds. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge, 297-5633. In our remaining moments with Tony Garisco, Democrat, Sally Nungesser, Republican. And this is always an interesting time in Louisiana when we discuss politics, even when it's an off year. This year, no major elections, but there is much jockeying going on for what happens down the line. And a question from a listener to Sally, saying, wondering if there is any public policy initiated by the Obama administration that you support. Is there anything the president has done that gets the good housekeeping seal of approval from Sally Nungesser?
I kind of like his wife's program of teaching kids how to eat good food.
That's the best you can do. Okay. All right, Tony.
Tony,
what's the president done that's been effective?
Well, I think he's brought some big issues to the table. Whether we agree with them or not, I think they were worthwhile. One is the health care of a lot of people who don't have health care. I think the immigration reform issue is a big issue. He's not the only one. But he has brought a few things forward, how he's proceeded with that, or how successful, unsuccessful, with the nuts and bolts of it, is debatable, but I think he is a guy who's brought some things forward. And I do like his approach to foreign policy, especially, let's not go to war every time we turn around.
Mm-hmm. Well, there is definitely a partisan divide in this country and even in the state. And one of the few people who I think has tried to bridge that partisan divide is Jay Darden, who has his top advisors, Republican Sally Nungesser, and Democrat George Kennedy, who did a number on Sally when you were running for insurance commissioner.
Sure,
have you ever forgiven him for that?
Let me say this. No, because I enjoy him trying to make it up to me. So
pretty good.
I'm not going to forgive him anytime soon.
You still got to pay.
Well, Sally worked, at least was close to Bob Livingston.
Yes. I've never worked for him, though.
Well,
yeah,
but
him.
And Bob's a nice man, very nice man. But he is a hard right conservative, and if he had become Speaker of the House, people would have become familiar with Bob Livingston as an in-your-face conservative, a guy who wouldn't back down. I mean, he stands up. And here's an example. He was on this show a few days ago talking about the poor.
The poor have so many lobbyists in this town that they outnumber. In fact, the social programs have grown exponentially in recent years. This government is doing more.
JC? All right. We had the congressman fade out on us, but I think we got the message there. Mm-hmm. Tony, he says the poor has too much clout on Capitol Hill. Do you agree?
Boy, I have no idea if the poor has more clout. I don't know who. The poor doesn't have any clout except in numbers. Other than that, I don't know what they have. And I never like to say the poor. There are people who have less than others, but I don't know if that's the poor.
Unfortunately, the clout is growing as the jobless rate goes up. I think I saw a statistic the other day that only 47% of the American people have full-time jobs. I mean, that's scary, you know, and at some point there are more people who need than people who have the wherewithal to give, and we need to work on not increasing the number of people who are dependent on government, but we need to increase their ability to stand on their own 2 feet. And so I think that's one of the big differences between Republicans and Democrats at this point in time is the Democrats just say, oh, let's keep giving everybody everything. And the Republicans are like, wait a minute, we're going to run out of money.
All right, but Bobby Jindal depends on the government. David Vitter depends on the government. When's the last time either one of these guys worked in the private sector and was not being paid by the taxpayers?
Well, I mean, that's public service is, you know, historically you've got to have so many people running the government and you pay them to run the government. So I don't think there's anything wrong with that. That's not what I'm talking about, Jim. What I'm talking about is the unrealistic view that we can basically take care of everybody who wants to be taken care of and we don't have to set up systems where it's not a good thing to be on the government dole. You know, it's something that you want to work your way out of, not into.
What Arnold Schwarzenegger did, he didn't take a paycheck. If you really believe in public service rather than being paid handsomely by the taxpayers, then don't take the money, Tony.
Mike Foster didn't.
Mike Foster did not.
Well,
you're correct.
I don't know what the law is in California, but that Mike Foster never took a paycheck is a misnomer. It's not correct. The state treasury was reduced every month and every year. Mike Foster got a W-2. What he did with the money was what, and most people would have to put food on the table. What he did with the money is put it into a fund, something for teachers or education. But he was paid.
Okay.
What he did with it was something else.
That's what we're talking about, though. Take the money that you're given by the taxpayers.
That's correct.
And invest it in something that is beneficial to the taxpayers. And the governor, Mike Foster, did that.
Yeah.
Okay, Dominic and Grand Coteau. Dominic, good morning.
Good morning, folks. A comment I'd have is that you have to admit that these recent years with Obama are way better than the previous 8 years of George Bush. And it was a big hole to dig out of. We are moving forward.
All right. You agree, Sally?
No, I don't. I mean, I do agree that we have had some financial problems, and part of that was when the Republicans had control, I don't think we moved as fast as we should have in taking care of trying to restructure some of these programs so that we could survive. I don't agree with you that things are better. Maybe they're personally better for you. I don't think they're better for the country, and I don't think the statistics would support.
So you think George Bush, who shares a birthday with you, was a good president?
I do. I think he was a great president.
George Bush?
Yes, I do.
The last George Bush?
Yes.
Okay, Tony, was he a great president, a good president?
I think he was a decent president, except for, with one caveat for me, was that I just think we got the country diverted. We couldn't take a good punch in 9/11, and I think the country overreacted. The president was well-meaning, but we should never have gone to Iraq. I think the Afghanistan thing made sense because that's where it was fought, you know, that's where it was spawned. But I think that got us way off track. That he could have had a much better presidency had they not had these neocons that kind of pushed him into that. Like, I think Cheney was the worst guy in the world. I think George Bush was so much better man, but he had a vice president that was, I don't know, this guy's weird.
Okay, on that note, we'll let you go. And Sally's the one who's laughing. I'm not laughing about Dick Cheney. Thank you, Sally. Thank you, Tony.
Okay.
And we're there you go. So, thank you. And we're joined now by Erica Crenshaw. She's a fascinating person right here in our community, a former Wall Street equity research analyst with over 16 years of finance experience, leading global investment bank Goldman Sachs in 2002. Upon purchasing the New York rights to Amerispec, and while running Amerispec, Erica launched something called Execute Now, and she is executing now in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing fine. So you're a person who has great experience with Wall Street. How in the world did you end up in Baton Rouge, Louisiana?
Oh, wow. Well, that's a question we have to ask my husband. He accepted a position with Albemarle Corporation nearly 5 years ago, which is how we end up coming here to the great city of Baton Rouge.
And you now advise companies, I guess, both in the for-profit and non-profit sector, but particularly in the non-profit sector. And this, with the tenuous economy, is a particularly vulnerable time for non-profits. Why?
Well, it's a vulnerable time for not just non-profits, but public or private companies as well. We're coming out of one of the greatest recessions of all time with 2008. But in particular, with nonprofits, what we're seeing is a cut in funding across the board, whether it be from private funding or from government funding, as we've seen here in Louisiana over the past couple years or so. So it's a huge challenge for nonprofits that depend on those fundings.
Is that true all over the country?
That is true all over the country. There was a organization in Chicago, the Jane Addams Hull House, that actually closed after over 100 years of being in operation because they were overly dependent on federal funds. Nearly 87% of their money came from federal government, and those funds were cut over the years, and they weren't able to secure private funding or just additional resources. So they actually had to close their doors, and they served almost 60,000 people in the Chicago area.
So how do you secure private funding?
Well, you have to have a really strong leader, one. You have to have a good CFO and someone who is providing strategic financial planning, scenario analysis, looking at trends, because this isn't anything that's new, the government funding, but you have to be proactive. And when something like that happens, you have to make certain that you're in place to be able to absorb any cuts. Mm-hmm.
Many of these nonprofits don't have the resources to have a seasoned financial person and the kinds of people in place that you say would be beneficial. So what do you do when you're operating on a skeleton budget trying to pay the bills.
Sure. Well, that is how really how Execute Now came into existence. I helped to start a charter school in Louisiana when we first moved here, and I noticed that you're dealing with small budgets, and most of these nonprofits don't have an opportunity or the ability to have a strong accounting department and a finance department. So what we have done, we've designed put together a business model that allows them to have both of those departments for a fraction of the cost. Mm-hmm. But if you don't have that, it is challenging because generally you have someone who's in-house who's just really kind of doing the day-to-day, mm-hmm. but no one is really thinking strategically about the numbers. So surprises happen. And when you find out that funding has been cut and you don't have a replacement for those revenues, or you haven't even thought about mm-hmm. how you would replace that income, then you're caught off guard. And no one has thought strategically about the company or done any peeking around the corners, what we say, or any forward-looking analysis.
Erica Crenshaw, who is president and CEO of Execute Now, has experience not only with Wall Street giant Goldman Sachs, but also 3M, mm-hmm. Deutsche Bank, Citibank, Prudential. So you've been around the block. You're now in Baton Rouge, and I understand you're a Chinese culture enthusiast. Is that right?
That's right. I spent some time in Shanghai, China. I spent about a year there working with the Shanghai Institute of Foreign Trade and learned Mandarin and just had a fascinating time. Shanghai is like a second home to me.
What do you think of the Chinese economy, which is
booming, right?
Second largest in the world.
Certainly. Absolutely. I think there's a lot that we can learn from the Chinese economy. But obviously, it's just different because we're talking about a different structure of mm-hmm. government. You're talking about a communist country where everything is completely controlled, whereas being in America, which is absolutely wonderful because we're talking about free markets, and you have an opportunity to succeed under those markets without having the government making certain mandates or shutting you down for any reason.
Right. How are you received when you go to China?
Received well. People are obviously very curious, but China has opened up so much. It's different than it was even 15, 20 years ago. There are a lot more Americans that visit China throughout the year, so I'm generally received very well there.
Now, when you were in New York, I know you were ubiquitous when it comes to media presence on shows like this and featured in most of the New York newspapers, Essence Magazine. You got a lot of attention when you were in the Big Apple.
Well, I wouldn't say a lot of attention. I got some mm-hmm. attention in the Big Apple. I enjoy people. I enjoy meeting people and learning different stories and just networking in general. So that's how I was able to kind of open those doors.
Mm-hmm. Oh, question from a listener as far as minority businesses. Do minority businesses face special challenges?
I think all businesses face challenges. I think minority businesses, as a minority business owner, I can't say that I've faced any unique challenges. I think it is important for all business owners to make certain that they surround themselves with good people, that they have good mentors and good advisors. We have a really strong board of advisors that really help me think through problems and help to come up with solutions, not just for the business, mm-hmm. but also for clients as well. So I think that's important for all businesses. I can't say as a minority business owner for several years that I've experience anything that any other business owner may have experienced.
I've had people like you tell me that most businesses face challenges not because of low sales, but because of high expenses.
Sure. And that's something that you have to keep in under control. One of the things when we had the franchises, I had the tough decision of cutting costs, and cutting costs meant cutting overhead. And that's always a tough decision that you have to make. That is obviously a strategic decision, and that's a CFO level decision that has to be made mm-hmm. in conjunction with the CEO. So at that time, the economy changed, and we had to make some tough decisions. So either we make tough decisions quickly and try to cut costs as try to cut costs. Basic costs, and meaning eliminating a few jobs or we close shop. So business owners always have to make those decisions each day. And I think any CEO, whether you're CEO of a large company or a small company, are faced with those decisions on a daily basis.
I don't know how many times I've heard politicians, reflecting back to our earlier conversation, say that they're going to run government like a business.
Mm-hmm.
That's very hard to do, isn't it?
Well, I don't know how challenging that is to do. I think it's difficult to do because of the politics. You know, a lot of businesses, you have politics, but you can also make decisions a lot quicker than in government, where you need a majority of everything, or two-thirds of this or two-thirds of that. So running it like a business is a smart decision.
Well, it's interesting, and I think good for our community that Erica Crenshaw is here, President and CEO of Execute Now. Hopefully we'll talk again soon. You have a website, don't you?
That's right, executenow.com.
Okay, that's easy enough. Mm-hmm. We'll see you soon. And we'll be back tomorrow for J.C. Kane. I'm Jim Engster. We thank you for listening. Have a great day, and stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at wrkf.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.